Okay, let's dive into some source material that's, well, it's really different today. We've got this collection of documents, and they don't really read like normal research. It's more like production notes for a very specific and honestly kind of unsettling type of horror.
Yeah, and alongside that, there's also what looks like a piece of a classified case file. It's strange.
It really is. It feels less like we're studying a subject and more like we're piecing together recovered media, maybe even, I don't know, cursed media.
That's the vibe. The tone in all these sources is just dripping with secrecy, forensic language, and this feeling of mystery that never quite gets solved.
Exactly. So what we want to do today is sort of break this down. First, let's unpack the principles behind making this kind of horror, the kind that feels like found footage or leaked document.
And then use that strange historical case study they included.
Right, the case study. And see how those principles actually play out. What makes that particular kind of dread, you know, work so well?
Well, what's immediately striking is how methodical these sources are about the rules for creating this unseen horror.
Yeah.
It's not about jump scares or obvious monsters. It's about building this atmosphere, this feeling that something is just fundamentally wrong, like you've stumbled onto something you really, really weren't supposed to see.
Let's dig into that. The core idea, they state it right up front, is that the horror is never explained, just hinted at.
It absolutely has to feel like leaked files, maybe garbled radio signals, broken recordings you found somewhere.
And they have super specific rules for production and tone to get that feeling, like no podcast banter, no easing in, just straight into the file.
Yeah, jump right in. And they talk about a slow escalation of dread, you know, deliberately holding back on the big scares early on.
Also, a really strict rule about using restrained language, not too emotional.
Which is interesting, right? Because usually in horror, you'd think you'd use really strong words to show terror.
Exactly. But these sources say restraint makes it feel more authentic. Like an official report trying, very clinically, to describe something awful.
Precisely. It gives it this cold, almost bureaucratic chill, even when the events are bizarre. And here's a really interesting part. The source material actually says that we, presenting this, should offer different viewpoints, maybe even disagree on what it means.
Why do you think they'd mandate that?
Well, it has to mirror the source material itself, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If the horror is meant to be ambiguous, never fully explained,
then the discussion about it shouldn't wrap everything up neatly either.
Right.
It keeps that confusion, that contradiction.
It forces you, the listener, to grapple with the same uncertainty as someone finding these files for the first time.
Okay. And then there's the storytelling style section. They talk about using forensic terms all the time. Recorded, flagged, surveillance, incident, archive, sealed.
Immediately frames it, makes it sound official, like something pulled from a vault.
Yeah, that adds that layer of bureaucratic horror they mention later. The scary part isn't just the weird event.
It's the idea that some system saw it, documented it, and then just filed it away, buried it.
The horror of the filing cabinet.
Exactly. And they mix that very clinical language with these really haunting phrases, things like the tape never blinked or he was standing in the static.
Ooh, yeah.
They rely heavily on setting, silence, contradiction, you know, letting an image or a weird sound carry the tension instead of just explaining what the threat is.
You don't need a long explanation if the description of a sound makes your hair stand on end, right?
Right. And critically, the stories have to end abruptly. Maybe a disturbing last line or a question, never a solid conclusion.
Like that example they gave, it wasn't a room, it was a trap, and someone keeps resetting it. That just hangs there.
It leaves you thinking. It forces your mind to imagine the awful possibilities, which brings up a key point they address. How do you create that deep dread using just sound and atmosphere? No big music cues, no jump scares.
They cover that under audio and atmosphere. Silence is explicitly suspicious. Shadows aren't just dark patches, they mean something.
And the audio cues are minimal, but unsettling. Long silences, maybe sounds played backwards, distortion, a low hum you can barely hear, tape drag.
Definitely no standard dramatic music. The sound itself becomes part of the story, a clue.
A low hum that sounds like breathing, maybe a weird mechanical noise. It hints at something huge and wrong just outside your perception. And dead air. It's not empty.
No, it's deliberate tension, like you're holding your breath. That silence means something was just there or is about to be there.
It makes you wait. Yeah. waiting for the other shoe to drop, or maybe just waiting for the echo of something terrible to finally fade.
So what about the people in these stories? The source talks about dialogue realism.
Right. The characters aren't supposed to be typical horror victims running upstairs when they should run out the door. They act rationally.
But they're confused, deeply confused, trying to make sense of something that just doesn't make sense.
And that's often scarier, isn't it? Seeing a normal person, someone relatable, face something that just shatters their reality. Watching them try to process it logically while everything falls apart.
And it's not just external reality breaking down. They mention memory distortion, unreliable transcripts, you know, with bits blacked out or gaps.
So the horror isn't just out there. It might be messing with your own memory, or it's embedded in the very record you're trying to understand.
Yeah, exactly. Which leads right into the psychological horror devices.
Things like memory loops, that feeling you've been here before, but something's off. Or time itself feels broken.
Or parasitic footage, the idea that just watching or listening to the recording somehow affects you, draws you in, maybe changes you.
Creepy. And pattern logic, recurring numbers, names, phrases that seem like a code you can't crack, suggests some kind of intelligence behind it all, or a fixed sequence playing out.
And back to the bureaucratic horror. The forms, the memos, the requests for reports. The terror of being just another case file in some vast, indifferent system.
It really paints a picture where the horror isn't just a one-off thing. It's part of a bigger system, maybe a cover-up, maybe something cyclical. The lore and thematic texture section points right at this.
Everything connects to something larger, maybe a test or, I don't know, some kind of farm for these anomalies.
And some entities aren't even physical. They're ambient. They exist in the static, the silence, the gaps. They corrupt things. The place, the recording, the person.
They're not just in the file. Maybe they are the file.
Whoa. And the focus shifts to why things are documented, not just what happened. That implies someone or something is recording this intentionally, maybe for study or to track it.
Every entry feels like just brushing up against this enormous unseen thing that you can never fully grasp.
Which brings us neatly to the case study they included. Seems totally unrelated at first, but through this lens, it becomes incredibly chilling.
Okay, here's where the documents give us something concrete. Excerpts from a case file. Cape Lookout, North Carolina, September 1933. It's the account of a lighthouse keeper, Elias Hart.
And this incident was clearly flagged, marked somehow. Elias wrote in his journal about seeing something impossible.
Yeah, the sky flickered, the sea went completely dark, and then he heard this metallic voice out of the fog, repeating, reloading civilizational patterns.
Reloading civilizational patterns. Just that phrase. It hits those notes we talked about, the pattern logic, the larger system. It feels huge, computational, and utterly indifferent.
Terrifyingly indifferent, yeah. The source says that over the next few days, his radio just put out a low hum, like breathing.
And the seagulls vanished.
Yeah.
Just gone. Huh. At night, Elias thought he saw lights pulsing under the water.
Then, day three, the Coast Guard shows up. The file says they found the lighthouse locked from the inside.
But Elias wasn't there. Lights on, food still on the table, his journal open to the last page he wrote.
Elias Hart never found. His journal was likely archived. The whole thing feels sealed. It was officially closed and put away.
But here's the kicker, the source notes. That metallic sound Elias described. Apparently it still happens. Every time the fog rolls in thick over the sea at Cape Lookout. To this day.
Chilling. And the excerpt ends with that line. The next reset begins with silence.
Okay, so let's apply the framework from the sources here. For me, this case screams bureaucratic horror meets anomaly.
How so?
Well, the timing Coast Guard arrives after exactly 3 days. The lighthouse locked from the inside. The scene untouched. It feels controlled, like a predetermined response. Maybe even staged by some organization.
Staged.
Or at least contained. Documented precisely, then deliberately buried. Feels like that cold, functional system the principals described, managing an incident. It feels like cover-up and system.
See, I read those same details differently. While the official response is weirdly clinical, the events themselves, the sky, the sea, that voice talking about reloading, the underwater lights, that leans so hard into the supernatural for me, or maybe temporal.
So you're thinking less cover-up, more
cosmic
event.
Maybe. It feels like one of those ambient entities or the pattern logic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Something vast, maybe cyclical, messing with reality in ways we just don't get. The locked room, the untouched scene. Maybe that wasn't staging. Maybe that's just how whatever took Elias operates. Some bizarre non-human logic that includes sealing the door behind it.
But the timing, the 3 days, then the authorities.
Mm.
and leaving the journal open, displaying the impossible story. It's almost too neat, like the event or the system behind it wanted this record found, read, and archived.
Okay, yeah.
That fits perfectly with the principle of focusing on why it was documented. It wasn't just a disappearance. It was a documented anomaly filed away, maybe for later reference by this system.
But documentation doesn't rule out the supernatural, does it? It could just mean something else is keeping meticulous records of its own processes,
yeah,
or incursions. And that phrase, reloading civilizational patterns, that feels bigger than just one government agency, you know? It implies a scale beyond human history, maybe resetting existence. That connects right back to the pattern logic, the larger system lore. It feels like contact with something immense, ancient, and totally indifferent, not just a localized strangeness that got covered up.
Whether it's a meticulous cover-up or some reality-warping entity, the case study absolutely nails the storytelling principles from the sources, doesn't it?
Oh, completely. How it uses silence, the radio hum, the missing birds, that final line about silence before the reset.
The unsettling sounds, the metallic voice, the hum that apparently persists. It hints at that larger system with the reloading phrase and the next reset.
It uses contradiction locked from inside, but Elias is gone.
And yeah, it delivers that perfect eerie ending. Elias gone, the sound still there, and that final line leaving you with pure dread about what a reset even means. No answers, just unease.
It really takes all those abstract production notes and distills them into one really disturbing story.
Yeah, it pulls it off. Atmosphere over action, hinting instead of explaining, grounding it in realistic confusion and framing it all as a piece of a sealed file.
Leaves you feeling like you've only glimpsed a tiny piece of something huge, terrifying, and still going on.
So many questions left. What was that voice? What does reloading civilizational patterns actually mean for us? And yeah, what about that next reset begins with silence? The sources want you asking those questions.
So putting it all together from these documents, creating that specific, potent kind of horror seems to rely on this really careful mix. You prioritize atmosphere, that unsettling feeling.
You hint at things, never spell them out. You use realistic confusion to make the unreal feel even scarier.
And you always, always frame it like it's classified, recovered, corrupted media, something you maybe shouldn't have found.
It puts you, the listener, in the position of being this unauthorized archivist, trying to make sense of fragments that some system or something much stranger tried to hide.
Makes you wonder, what if the truly terrifying things aren't lurking in the shadows, but are just documented, filed away somewhere, just waiting for their next scheduled reset?